It's time for Let's Talk Legal with your host, Cecil Harvell and Wes Collins from the law firm of Harvell & Collins. If you've got a legal question, they can give you the answer. Call now, 1-800-818-2255, and let's talk legal.
And now let's talk legal with Harvell & Collins, and Wes Collins is with us this morning. Good morning, Wes.
Morning, Ben.
What are we talking about today?
You know, we started last week on adverse possession. We had a great caller who called in on a related issue. He had a situation where he owned what we refer to sometimes as heir property, some property he had inherited. He had a tenants in common interest, relatively small interest, based on an understanding, a relatively low-value property. He just didn't know what to do with it.
Yeah, so he'd been paying the taxes on it and taking care of it.
That's right. And, you know, the other family members were not really contributing to it, so he had some questions about what his options were. So that really took up the bulk of the program. But since we started this adverse possession conversation last week, I think we'll, since just me today, we'll wrap that up, today. And then I think next week we'll move on to a topic. We, you know, it's really a hot topic in at all times in Carter County, which is riparian rights or water rights. But we'll start that next week, and, we deal with that quite often. In many different contexts, but we'll talk about adverse possession today.
Okay, let's get go back for a quick definition.
Yeah, basically adverse possession referred to in general as squatter's rights. Mm-hmm. You know, it's the right to acquire title in property. You know, normally when you're acquiring title in property, you do that because someone conveyed it to you through a deed.
Right.
Or because someone passed away and left the property to you, either through their will or through intestacy, meaning without a will. Those are the normal ways that we, you know, acquire real property. You can acquire title to real property through this adverse possession concept, which is a continuous, open, hostile, intentional taking of someone else's property by using it as your own for a significant period of time.
Right.
Typically, we talk about 20 years. That's normally what we're talking about if we don't have what's called color of title, meaning we're just trying to take the property as our own, use it as our own, pay the taxes, mow the lawn, maintain it, maybe even you know, put a fence on it, you know, whatever, build something on it, maintain it in some way, like I said, for a 20-year consecutive period of time. But we don't have, let's say, a deed that might include that in the property. But let's say that we do have a deed, and it's a competing deed with someone else, like we talked about last week, and maybe there's a portion of our property that is described in someone else's deed. Well, if we're using it as our own and we think it's ours openly, hostily, intentionally, as I spoke of, then that's what's called under color of title. So that statute of limitations drops down from 20 years to a 7-year period of time. So it's a much shorter period of time. So definition in general, squatter's rights, openly using property as your own for a relatively long period of time, right? A consecutive period of time to the point where that use ripens into good title in the property.
And the exception for color of title, what has to take place for that exception?
Well, you know, color of title is not really a black and white situation. You know, if there's a document that you have that indicates that maybe you do in fact have title to it, but maybe that document is in error.
Oh, so you believe you have title to
it. Right.
So,
that's correct.
Okay.
But that would be a good general description of what that color of title would be.
So it's not so much adverse at that point because they believe they have title.
That, well, you know, it's they believe they have title, but they know that others may claim title in that as well.
Okay. All right.
But you can't just go out and create a fraudulent document, you know, to try to put yourself in a position under the 7-year statute of limitations instead of 20.
Okay.
So, you know, just having your brother sign a deed to you may not get you there.
Right.
Yeah. So generally that's what we're talking about. Some other general concepts that we talk about with regard to adverse possession is that the use of the property cannot be permissive. permissive use can never ripen into adverse possession.
Right. Somebody gave you permission to park your trailer there.
That's right.
Does not mean that you...
And I've done it for years and da-da-da-da-da. Well, right. I mean, what happens if you park your trailer there, you maintain the property, you cut the grass, mm-hmm. you do all these things on the property, and then the person who gave you permission passes away?
Mm-hmm.
Well, then we've got an evidentiary issue, don't we?
Yeah.
We potentially have an issue there with regard to whether that use was permissive or whether it wasn't permissive. Maybe if the trespasser, the person who's on the property using mm-hmm. it, is not being up and up about it, then on the up and up about it, then they might certainly say, well, I just used it as my own and nobody ever gave me permission.
Mm-hmm.
So you can kind of defend against a possible adverse possession claim somewhat preemptively by preparing some type of document mm-hmm. that your family knows about, like a letter
right.
to this person saying, you know, you've been using this property for a long period of time. I have no problem with it. It's always been permissive. If you have mm-hmm. any questions, let me know.
Right.
You know, send it certified mail with a return receipt so we see that it's been received. Put it with your important papers. And then in the event that there's a claim by that person through adverse possession, then mm-hmm. that letter is going to be pretty strong evidence that your use of my property for all these years was a permissive use.
Right.
So, therefore, it can't ripen into adverse possession. Now, that's not a slam dunk, but it's one of the, it's a good thing you can do to just show that it was permissive use.
Okay. So, say you discover mm-hmm. that somebody is using your property. It's nowhere near this time limit, either one of them for that matter.
Right.
But somebody is using that property, and you're maybe a long distance owner.
Correct.
And you haven't been there in a while, and you see this is happening. Do you have to go through an eviction process? In order to take that property back or to claim it again, or can you just put up a fence and lock the gate?
Well, I mean, you can certainly put up the fence and lock the gate. I mean, if they haven't gotten to the point where there's mm-hmm. they've had 20 years consecutive,
right.
then you can stop the use.
Mm-hmm.
You could have conversation with the person. You know, you can say, I just got the survey. I see that you're on my property. I just visited North Carolina from mm-hmm. California, and now I see that you're on my property. Didn't know anything about it. And, I don't have any problem with it, but let's work out what the deal is here, you know, if you don't have any problem with it.
Yeah.
And that could be a situation where you want to document that conversation showing that it was permissive use.
Mm-hmm.
Could be a situation where you don't want them on your property. So you ask them to get off of the property. Could be a situation where if it's, you know, relatively high value property is something we're really concerned about. We don't want to lose our property. And, you know, the user of the property is being, you know, aggressive back toward you. You may want to bring an action to quiet title, you know, mm-hmm. so that we can deal with this now to show that this is mine. This area is my property, not this person's property.
Yeah. Now you have, you mentioned last week that there are a lot of areas in down East Carteret County, and probably every listening area here has a similar spot. But there's a lot of areas where the lines have been kind of vague.
Right.
So is that where some of the cases arise, where lines are vague?
Yeah, let me contrast that a little bit. You know, when you have your typical subdivision plat map,
mm-hmm.
and you can pull that map from the courthouse, mm-hmm. and you can see the little rectangles or squares of each lot.
Mm-hmm.
Well, and that is the description that's used when these properties are conveyed. Normally, you're not going to have an issue with regard to the legal description being incorrect.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. But then when you get into the more rural areas and you've got legal descriptions that reference things like from a tree,
mm-hmm. That's right.
From a gum tree
next
to Mr. Willis's farm.
Right.
At the corner of Old South Road.
Right.
You know, running to a creek. Mm-hmm. These things change over time.
Mm-hmm.
You know, maybe that tree's not there anymore.
Mm-hmm.
You know, maybe if there's sometimes we see stones, mm-hmm. you know, in the legal description. Maybe that's not there anymore. So it's more of a moving target with regard to putting together our legal description for these properties. And, you know, in many situations, almost every situation, when you're looking at a description of real property that's in a rural area, you know, it's not a nice little square or a nice little rectangle,
mm-hmm.
you know, 50 by 100 or 200 by 100 or whatever it might be. It's more of a whatever it ends up being.
Right.
I mean, there might be, you know, 10 calls and distances mm-hmm. in this, this description for the property. So when you have all of that going on with regard to a legal description, it increases the chances that there might be some overlap.
If you have questions about adverse possession or any other legal matter, you can give us a call at 800-818-2255 or these local numbers.
247-7282 or 353-4674.
And we'll have more to come in just a moment with Harvell and Collins Attorneys at Law. Wes Collins in the studio with us, and we'll have more right after this. Hey, welcome back. And Wes Collins with us from Harvell & Collins, online at harvellandcollins.com. You can reach us as well at 800-818-2255, 247-7282, or 353-4674, talking about adverse possession. You wanted to go back to look at a...
Yeah, there were several issues we were talking about. We're talking about the period of time that you have to use the property in order for, you know, to acquire title, for mm-hmm. your title to ripen into good title, or for your use to ripen into title through adverse possession. You know, we talk about the 7-year period of time. We talk about the 20-year period of time. If it's a government-owned piece of property, in some situations you can't adversely possess it at all.
Mm-hmm.
And in some situations it's a longer statute of limitations. But an adverse possession claim against a private property owner is much easier than, you know, moving against the
right.
government.
Well,
I mean, and it's logical because the government can't sit there. I mean,
right.
who's going to sit there and look at the United States government piece of property, make sure someone's not going to use it.
But in Morehead City, like a lot of southern towns, have alleys between houses.
Right.
And sometimes people believe that they are their alleys.
That's right.
So
I mean, you can get into that issue. You know, these alleys in Morehead City, you know, they are on the original plat map of mm-hmm. the town of Morehead City that's way back when. So
mm-hmm.
I think there's a pretty good description with regard to those. You know, the other thing that we talk about with regard to the consecutive period of time for use of the property for adverse possession is that it doesn't just have to be one person who's using it for
mm-hmm.
that period of time. You can tack on previous owners, previous users, I should say.
It has to be consecutive, but it doesn't have to be the same.
That's correct.
Right. Okay.
So, I mean, you could have evidence that, you know, John Smith used the property for 10 years and now I've been using it for 10 years and here's his affidavit saying he used it, neighbor's affidavit, neighbor's mm-hmm. testimony, so on and so forth, put it together 20 years.
Mm-hmm.
I have an adverse possession claim. It doesn't just have to be just, you know, one person
right.
consecutively. So you can tack with regard to that. You know, we also see this quite often when we're talking about not just use of the property and maintenance of the property, such as part of your yard or part of a field or part of, you know, a tract of land.
Mm-hmm.
But we also see it as it relates to access to property.
Mm-hmm.
And that kind of takes us to somewhat of a subsection of adverse possession, which falls under a prescriptive use, like a prescriptive easement.
Mm-hmm.
For example, I've used this road for 20 years.
Mm-hmm.
I bought gravel to go on it. Here are
right.
my receipts
right.
over the years. I've hired my neighbor to grade the road out and paid him. Here are the receipts.
Mm-hmm.
So I have acquired a prescriptive easement over this road.
Mm-hmm.
Even though the title's not in my name, I've been using it as access to my property for 20 consecutive years, and I have shown that in the maintenance and the money I've spent on these type of things.
Right.
And it's been open. It's been obvious. This mm-hmm. is how I've driven to my
property. This is how I've had access property. To my property.
Right. So sometimes we do get into cases where, you know, maybe the true owner of that road
mm-hmm.
tries to block that access and say, no, you need to go this other way to get to your property. Well, then we get, you know, obviously into an issue with regard to whether that prescriptive easement has been acquired through use.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, looking at what you can do in order to improve your claim for adverse possession or prescriptive easement. Just kind of went through a couple of those with that example there regarding use of the road. Is, you know, if you're going to use the road as your own, but it's not an actual easement of record that's open for use, well, you know, maintaining it, spending a little money on it every year, that's going to help your claim.
Right.
You know,
right.
Having someone grade it, fill in potholes, that's going to help your claim. You know, the tax bill is probably not going to be coming in your name. It's going to be coming in the true owner's name. So, I mean, you probably wouldn't have that opportunity.
But that, that in and of itself wouldn't have mattered anyway, would it?
That in and of itself doesn't matter, but it is an element that we look at. So just getting your ducks in a row, Ben, with regard to the possibility that my use of this access for all this period of time, I kind of know it's really not a true easement of record. I kind of know it's Mr. Gilligan's property, whatever it might be. I've really been maintaining it, so I'm going to put a file together. I'm going to start keeping my records on this. That may help you or help your family in years to come.
In North Carolina, let me see if that's true, that you can't convey property that that you can't access?
You have to have access to property, yes. You can't – there's –
So if this was the claim that this was my only access.
Yeah, you can convey the property that doesn't have access, but you have a, you have an absolute right to access to your property.
Right.
So you you can acquire that either through an easement that can be established by the courts, or the old kind of the old school cases are called Cartway proceedings, you know, where we can get to it through this Cartway path. So if there's a landlocked piece of property, then there's a procedure that you can go through in the courts in order to establish that access, ingress, egress, and regress from your landlocked property. And, you know, if you're a property owner around a landlocked property, you know, the court can take some of your property and place on it, you know, an easement, an open easement, for this person with the landlocked property to come and go.
So, the guy who's been putting gravel down and saying, this is the only way this is the only way I've gotten to my property for years. Unless you're going to give me another way.
Right.
Another path.
You know, Ben, normally in these cases, there is another way. There is another access. But the access that's been used,
was more convenient.
is more convenient and the property has been set up. So that is the logical place to come and go from. The house has been built in a certain place.
Right.
Might be like a carport in a certain place. You know, the outbuilding as far as like a garage or whatever might be in a certain place. And if you're going to make me use this other access, well, I've got to cut a road. I've got to cut down trees. I've got to spend $20,000 to do all this.
And meander through.
Got to meander through all this, you know, other property. So a lot of times in these cases, that's what we see. You know, why in the world would we change the way this has been for at least 20 years, you know, just so that, you know, you can stop access on this property. And normally this comes up when the true owner is kind of interested, getting interested in selling the property.
Yes.
And then the buyer is in looking at this saying, tell me about this road. We've done title work and we see there's a road on your property, but there's no easement.
So. More to come in a moment here with Wes Collins from Harvell & Collins. Welcome back to Let's Talk Legal with Harvell & Collins. As we mentioned last week, again, with adverse possession, Wes Collins joins us, is that this comes down in North Carolina, and I'm not sure what it is in other states, but North Carolina specifically talks about highest and best use of property. So you don't want property to just sit there.
That's right. And that's probably, you know, we've got maybe three or four minutes to go. So, I mean, that's really is the general concept here. I mean, this is not a law that's on the books for purposes of allowing people to go steal people's property.
Right.
And that's why we've got a statute that requires 20 years of use. It doesn't allow individuals to rest on their rights either and not take care of their property. What it supports, this old school common law from the old country, squatter's rights, it supports the highest and best use of property. in the event that, you know, you own real property, but you're not maintaining it, you're not paying attention to what's going on with it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, maybe you're not even covering the taxes. Depending on what's going on with the property, then you could lose it in the event that someone else comes on the property and uses it as their own for the requisite period of time, which is normally 20 years. Mm-hmm. So
but
that highest and best use concept is really what that's supporting.
And that's the same concept behind what we talked about a couple weeks ago, petition to partition, where you force a sale of property.
Right.
You know, again, it's the same concept with lots of different, well, we're going to talk about riparian rights next week. And so it is a foundational tool, really.
That's right.
Of North Carolina.
That's
property
correct.
Law.
And, you know, when we talk about acquiring title through adverse possession, you know, the next question would be, well, okay, Mr. Collins, well, if I've acquired title now through adverse possession, you say I have title and I want to sell that property. Well, I don't have anything in the courthouse that says I own that property. What do I do about that?
Yeah.
Well, if you get to that point, then you most likely are wanting to bring an action in court to quiet title to show that I have used this property hostily, intentionally, openly, notoriously, continuously for 20 years. And that's where that evidence comes in.
Mm-hmm.
That's where that folder of evidence of that's where the witness statements, that's where, you know, people can testify about how this property is being used. That's how the photographs can be used. That's how, you know, the, maybe the aerial photographs,
the drone photographs now.
Yeah. Drone photographs, but we can go back and look at old tax records.
Mm-hmm.
We look at CAMA maps.
Mm-hmm.
We look at all of these old records, land records, to see where was that fence?
Right.
Where was that road? Where was that old store that you said was right where you used the property up to? You know, that evidence, a lot of times, you know, it fades over time.
Right.
So if you're in a position where you're wanting to acquire title through adverse possession and you're using it as your own, well, start putting together that evidence so that in the event that you ever do want to sell the property or acquire that title through a quiet title proceeding, that it's all lined up very nicely and it's a, you know, kind of a, you know, a stronger case, a very strong case.
A quiet title proceeding then creates a title or?
Then you get a court order indicating title in this particular property described in this way is vested in whoever the plaintiff's name is. If
does that
you win
become
that.
A deed or is that?
It does. I mean, you get a court order that shows that title is yours. Then a title insurance company would then provide insurance over that because the court has given its stamp of approval, a court order, and has the power of law behind it. Yeah.
Okay. So again, that's that is the result of this long drawn out proceeding.
That's right.
Taking a couple of decades to happen.
Well, it starts with the use.
That's right.
And then it ends with, you know, the court saying, well, guess what? You've done it. So
if you need advice along this line, then you want to give the folks at Harvell & Collins a call. You can reach them at 252-726-9050, 726-9050, 1107 Bridges Street in Morehead City, online at harvellandcollins.com.